function macros were in the game for quite a while before we actually started properly using them. And then after a certain point, we're like, you know what, this thing can't really be done easily without macros, so I think we're just going to start using them. And after we did, it definitely made our lives a lot easier.
It's like, such a good feature.
Hello, hello. I'm Gears.
And I'm Mox Valix, and welcome to the Data Pack Podcast.
Yes, hello, and welcome. This is the first episode, so yeah, we'll see how it goes. Today we are talking about the technical aspect of Minecraft data packs. So I'm sure if you're clicking on this video, you probably know what a data pack is. If you don't, well, you probably should, because otherwise you won't really get what we're talking about in this episode. So, without further ado, we can start talking about technical data packs.
Yeah. So, Gears, how did you get into technical data packs in the first place?
Yeah, so I think the first, like, real technical data pack I made was called Fungecraft. So, basically, at the time, I was into this thing in programming called Esoteric Programming Languages, or ESOLangs for short, which are basically programming languages which are created to be sort of difficult to program in, or, like, weird in some kind of way. And in particular, I was interested in this language called Befunge, which is basically a programming language that works in two dimensions. Now, if you've ever done any programming, if you've programmed a data pack, you essentially know that the order of the program is determined by the order in which you write the commands. So the commands at the top of the file will run first, and the commands at the bottom of the file run last.
Yep.
Now, Befunge takes it slightly differently. In Befunge, you start at the top left, and you start moving right, and you can use commands to change the direction of the program, change the way that the program is flowing. So you basically end up sort of going in, like, you know, all around the screen in, like, a 2D world and executing instructions as you go. And I thought it would be pretty cool, since it's quite like a sort of a spatial language, I could probably make that in Minecraft with a data pack. So I did. I made a data pack which would look at blocks in Minecraft world, and it would interpret them all as instructions. And I made a video on it. So if you want to see me trying to make that, I will link the video on screen now. But yeah, that is pretty much how I originally got into technical data packs. That was, like, the first real one I made. But what about you? How did you get there, Mox Valix?
Yeah, so I've been, like, for years I was just, like, playing around with commands and data packs, and I started getting into data pack jams, which is something we'll probably talk about at a later time. But for one of the data pack jams, we made a data pack called The Other Side, which was basically a skulk dimension. 1.19 was fairly new at the time, and I wanted to explore what a skulk dimension would be like. But part of that is I've always had a bit of an issue with the Minecraft inventory system, and I wanted to try and see if I could have the data pack provide some way of, like, helping with that. So I started toying around with the idea of custom bundles, and the fact that you can actually store arbitrary NBT data in items. And that led me to toy around a lot with the slash data command, and obviously the slash execute store and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of fell in love with that side of data packing. and then
yeah, I find it just... that like technical data packs are sort of yeah, it's quite different to the rest of data packs. It's more like actual programming. And I find that it's a lot less. How do I say? Like, I feel like there's quite a lot of tweaking involved with making a data pack. Like, you know, if you're making a sword that poisons everyone around it when you use it, you've got to like tweak the radius and make sure that all your calculations are correct, so you don't accidentally like do something wrong, or and you've got to like polish everything quite a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas with the technical data pack, I find there's a lot less need to do that somehow.
Yeah, like the focus isn't on tweaking small details, small visual details, yeah. Or like toying around with little bits of like little values and stuff. It's much more about the logic behind it. It's figuring out.
I feel like sorry, continue with what you're saying.
Yeah, it's figuring out the ways that you're going to accomplish these tasks that are very much not intended to be done with a data pack. And I think there's something really interesting to that.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of data packs, there's like this sort of expectation that they're all going to be highly polished and like super clean experiences, which, if you've ever made data packs before, you know is quite hard, or at least I find it very hard to make everything, like, really well-balanced and make everything fun to play and exactly get the output that you wanted. Because there is a lot of those just, like, tweaking values, just like, okay, what should the distance be on this certain thing, or how many things should I need to craft a certain item, etc. And I just... It's kind of tedious, and it just takes a lot of work, and you've got to really know the exact output that you want. Whereas with the technical data pack, you can just sort of, like, make something, and if the logic is sound, then it works, you know?
You get to... You don't have to focus so much on the polish, like, the polished end-user experience. You focus a lot more on just doing a cool thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, tedious is definitely the right word for it, I'd say. There's so much to data packs that's just jank is the term I'd use. It's just janky. Yeah. And I guess the methods we end up using with our technical data packs still often are quite janky, but maybe but not in the same way.
There's less like sort of things that you need to tweak you know, I don't know. There's just some sort of aspect about technical how like what technical data packs like typically are that means you don't really have to toy with values like that the whole time.
Yeah.
And yeah, so basically after I made Fungecraft, I was like, oh yeah, this is actually really cool. I can make all sorts of things with data packs. And I was actually, I never finished it, but I started working on a second data pack, a second technical data pack for another video, which was based off another esoteric programming language called Pete, which is basically where you program using pixel art, and the program is also a two-dimensional thing, and it like sort of walks through the pixels and sees what color they are and everything. So I was going to make that in Minecraft,
cool.
But I never finished it because we actually started working on a different data pack. This was the two of us. And this is basically where we started working together. And we started properly working on stuff. We did actually know each other from a previous project that we'd worked on, right?
Yeah.
But again, also never got finished.
Yeah, there was a few things. I'd been in your Minecraft quiz video, I believe.
Oh yeah.
And then yeah, we did start as well another project that unfortunately never ended up going anywhere, but it was a really cool idea. And I'm not gonna say it because it still might happen one day.
But who knows if it ever will.
Who knows? Who knows at this point? I'm just hiding in this temple right now.
So, after, yeah, exactly, as you say, you were in that video which I made, and then after that we were working on another video, which, again, I'm not going to say because it may still happen. I'm hoping it'll still happen, because it was quite a fun concept. But yeah, we were just, like, talking about planning it out, basically, and then it turned out that the Datapack Jam was coming up, so
I think it was the next day. Even I think it might.
Yeah,
have
it
been.
Was the next day or like that week, basically.
Yeah,
I seem to remember. So yeah, essentially we just got talking, and so if you don't know what the Datapack Jam is, we're probably going to do an episode about it later. But essentially, it's this competition, which, if you've ever heard of a game jam before, it's just like that. You basically get a limited period of time to make a data pack based on a certain theme, and then after that limited period of time, they'll get judged, and the best data pack wins. It's a really fun concept. If you make data packs and you don't know about it, I definitely recommend checking it out. I'll leave a link to the Discord server in the description, so you can see that. But
it's basically, good time, great little community, well worth giving it a go.
Yeah, it's
a lot
of
fun. Keep going. Sorry.
So, basically, the Datapack Jam was coming up, and in the Datapack Jam, you're allowed to compete in teams. You're allowed to have a team of people working on a Datapack, you know, so that it's not just one person doing it by themselves. So, yeah, me and MoxValex decided we would team up for the next Datapack Jam. The rest is history, really. Basically, what happened is the theme was revealed to be ancient technology, right? I'll let you explain what happened.
Yes. Right. Well, recently, snapshot 23W03A, I believe it was. In my mind, a historic snapshot, but it added a very, it added a small little feature to MC function, really, that allowed you to take just a segment of a string. So, for anyone that's not so familiar on the NBT side of data packing, a string is basically anything enclosed into, like, any letters, numbers, whatever characters you want, enclosed in quotation marks, essentially. And up until this point, there was no way to get segments of those strings. You had to work with the entire string. Now, you could compare that string with other strings to see if they matched. There were methods of doing that. And there were methods of filtering the strings out and stuff like that. But there wasn't a way to get a segment of the string.
Yeah.
Until that snapshot. And at that point, we could turn a string into a whole array of characters. So we could split it up each character by character, and then that meant we could actually iterate over those characters. So we could perform code for each different character in the string. And, well, we had the idea of making a programming language.
Right, so I'm just going to step in here and say that, yeah, so after I made FungeCraft, obviously, that was a programming language, right? And Obviously, normally when you think of a programming language, you think of text in a file, right? But since in Minecraft, as Moxvalix said, text would be represented as a string, and up until that point, it was impossible to take bits of a string, and you'd have to look at the whole string at once. So it would be impossible to make a traditional programming language as like a written piece of text, and that's why I made it be represented as blocks instead. But ever since I made that, I always wanted to make some sort of written programming language, even though it was technically impossible at the time. So as soon as it became possible, literally that week, and then as soon as we had the theme ancient technology, I just really wanted some kind of programming language, because it would really just like complete, you know, that sort of thing that I'd started when I'd made Fungecraft, and it would be like a real programming language.
Yeah, and like we agreed to do the data pack jam together. We were in the cool just after the theme had been announced, and we were like, let's make a written programming language. And we're like, is it possible? And we opened up a Google Doc, we planned some things out, and we're like, hell yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And then we did that for an entire year.
Yeah, so at the time of recording, it's just been like a year anniversary of that data pack that we made for the data pack jam in a week, and we kept on working on it for a year afterwards, and we're finally sort of giving it a rest so we can work on other stuff. But like actually, a programming language in Minecraft wasn't the first idea that we came up with after the new snapshot came out. Because I remember we were in the call, right, talking about this video idea that I'd had. And I think it was like Friday or Saturday or something. Minecraft snapshots come out on a Wednesday. So it had been, you know, a couple of days since the snapshot had come out. And we were thinking about what kind of things we could make using this new string, manipulation feature. And we came up with the idea of implementing a regular expression parser in Minecraft datapacks. Now, you might not know what a regular expression is. I'm not going to go into detail here. I think that would be beyond the scope of this podcast, but basically it's just, it's essentially a way of specifying a pattern to match against a string. So, for example, regular expressions are used a lot in matching, in like determining whether or not a string is a valid email, because basically what you can do is you can say it's something something at something.com, for example, and that would only match things which, you know, are something at something.com. And you can do
super
much more
useful for
things.
Handling strings in any sense.
Yeah.
Very useful there. Obviously they have their limitations. There's actually an old programming joke. You solve a problem with regex, and well, now you've got two problems. And it's somewhat famous for being hard to read, but you learn it. But it is super useful, regex. Well,
it's
maybe
super useful.
Not useful in Minecraft.
Yeah, not necessarily in Minecraft, because you don't work with text a lot. But the point wasn't for it to be useful. The point was, can we make a working regular expression engine in Minecraft, right? In vanilla Minecraft, using only commands. And as it turned out later, we could, right? And it was a lot of fun to work on. But yeah, as I said, we actually worked on the programming language first, because, yeah, it was the Datapack Jam, and I'm not sure the judges would be that impressed if we turned up with, like, hey, you know, we can check if your email is valid in Minecraft. I don't think that would have been a particularly
That might be pushing it a little bit.
But, on the other hand, making a programming language is, one, impressive, and also, two, dang, you can... Oh.
Sorry, I just got blown up by a creeper.
Yeah. If you're just listening to the podcast, then yeah, that's what just happened. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're doing.
I don't know where I am either.
I don't know where I am either. Anyway.
Can I have your cords real quick?
Oh, yeah. Anyway. As I was saying, we basically came up with an idea, because a programming language is cool, but the Datapack Jam is more about creating, like, a playable experience. So, what we did is we sort of turned the programming language into, like, a sort of thing that you can use in Minecraft to help you. So, we made it so that you can control these little, little robots, essentially, in Minecraft to go and do stuff for you. And since it was, like, a little bit after the Minecraft mob vote, I feel like, I think it was a couple of months after the mob vote.
Yeah,
and
I think, yeah, it wasn't too long after that. It was still fresh in our minds, basically.
Yeah, the Copper Golem had been one of the candidates for the vote, and it hadn't won, so we decided
it should have won. It was the cool one. Just putting it out there.
That was... Yeah, I voted for the LA, I think.
The LA was cool as well. Yeah, I did like the LA.
So yeah, we made like a little cop golems, which you could program with a programming language, and yeah, we managed to make something, within a week, which actually functioned. Well, I say that, if you were to go back and look at version 0.1.0 of the Code of Copper Datapack, it doesn't work very well. It has quite a lot of bugs in it, but, you know...
It was a week. So. Yeah. I think we did well for a week. A lot of time constraints, and I was actually on a holiday, a family holiday, while doing it, so I had to do it in between whatever I was doing on the holiday, which is, I managed to slot it in, but my internet was quite patchy. But yeah, I would say probably the way we managed to get it done within a week's time is we actually split up the work.
Yeah.
So
we definitely were.
Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, I think we did it in quite a smart way. We, like, essentially, if you don't know how programming languages work, basically there's two parts to them. You have what's called a parser, which basically reads the text. So, for example, in Minecraft Datapack, Minecraft have written a program which reads through a Minecraft command and understands what you actually mean by that. Because there's some variation, right? There's some variation in what the commands look like, so you've got to have, like, some sort of program which properly understands what the commands are doing, essentially, what the programmer means. So, yeah, and then there's the interpreter, which takes the output that the parser has generated, which is basically a sort of format which is much easier to understand by computers, but harder to understand by humans. So the humans write source code, which is human readable, and then you have a layer, you have the parser, which transforms the human readable source code into slightly less readable, but more readable by a computer. And then you have the interpreter, which takes that generated output and essentially executes it.
Yeah.
So we basically decided then and there, right at the beginning, that I would do the interpreter, Mox Valix would do the parser, And yeah, we essentially planned out what the actual format
the AST.
AST as it's called, or abstract syntax tree. We decided what the format of that would be, what it would look like. And then essentially we basically just worked on our two separate halves mostly independently until near the end, where we put them together and saw the magic, saw the data pack work its magic, which was pretty cool.
That moment when we finally hooked them up together and they worked, felt incredible. That was a great, just one of those moments. I think we've got a clip of it. I think.
Yeah, we have. It's in the YouTube video that I published on my channel about making the data pack. I think that's probably enough talk about that data pack for now, because we're probably going to do another podcast episode about it. So we can leave that as it is.
That one's a biggie for us, so we'll definitely be coming back. Don't worry. If you want to hear more about programming languages in Minecraft, we've got you covered.
We're definitely gonna, because there's so much. Since we've been working on it for a year now, we've definitely we've gained a lot of experience for sure in technical data packs.
Definitely.
It's
gone through a couple rewrites.
Yeah, we've learned how to make a programming language in Minecraft, and we've gone through a lot of problems and solutions along the way. So yeah, I think there's definitely do an episode about that in the future. But yeah, let's talk more about like just technical data packs in general.
I guess I could probably talk a bit about Moxlib. That's something.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Something that I have worked on. I started work on it pretty much after I did the other side. So I took a lot of the concepts I developed from that data pack and I kind of made them into a set of helper functions. So I'll just give a quick overview. Moxlib is a data pack library. So a set of useful functions and other utilities that data pack developers can use to speed up the process, basically. And Moxlib very much had a focus on data-driven data packs. So working with NBT storage and essentially being able to store key-value pairs was a big focus of that data pack, as well as other stuff like what other things does it do? There's a bunch of helper tags, like you can get a block, and how to helper tag to set a block, just stuff that is surprisingly difficult to do dynamically.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of things which you can easily do manually, but you can't do dynamically, and it essentially had all the workarounds for that, and then the person who was making the data pack didn't need to worry about all of that. And that actually saved us a lot of effort, and it probably was the single thing which made it possible to make our programming language in a week, because if you hadn't already made Moxlib, we would have had to re-implement all of that functionality ourselves, which probably would have taken...
We would have been having to invent the wheel, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess I kind of want to delve into a bit the how difficult it used to be handling dynamic.
Unfortunately. I don't know. Take this how you will, but when they added macros, right, Moxlib became quite, like, semi-obsolete.
Yeah, in fact, like, and I'm almost thankful for it, actually. We're still relying on it for a couple of things in Coda Copper, but a lot of things that were difficult that Moxlip had to work around became pretty easy to do thanks to function macros. And
yeah, so
I guess should I explain those briefly? I think
we can talk about that. I think function macros really made a lot more things in technical data packs possible, especially technical data packs. Like, one thing that most regular programming languages rely on is the ability to do things dynamically, which is something that data packs don't really support very well.
So, for example,
if you have a list of things, in most programming languages, you can just say, okay, give me the nth item in the list, where n is some number that we decide later on, at runtime, basically. In data packs, you couldn't really do that, at least not when we originally made Code of Copper, which is the name of our programming language data pack. But yeah, function macros, if you want to explain those, they really made a lot of things possible, or at least much easier in technical data packs.
Yeah. So how function macro works, for those that haven't really toyed around with them, which I totally understand, they are a little bit to wrap your head around, that's for sure. But essentially, how it works is that you provide a function with a bit of data, at a little bit of MBT data when you call it, and this can be from a storage entity or a block, I believe, or you can just write it inline.
Yep.
And then that data gets put in line in, like, it basically gets string replaced into the function before the function is called. So it will take the string representation of the data. So I guess, like,
yeah, like
how
the
it looks
10
if
would
you
be... yeah, exactly.
Yeah. A string of 1 and 0. It's how it looks when you do the data get command and you look in the in the chat. It's pretty much that. So it just puts it right where you've told it to, with a little bit of syntax, and then it runs the function. And what this does is it actually allows you to it opens up the door for so many more dynamic things. Like, now you can store in like, let's say you had a list of an array of 10 items, right? There were 10 blocks, so it could be dirt, stone, cobblestone, etc. in this list. And then you generate a random number with the new random function, which they also added, which is very nice. And you can store that number in data storage. And then you can take that number and you can use a macro with it. And then suddenly that number gets put in the array index segment of the data path. So suddenly you can get the random nth item of the array that you've made.
Yeah, which was pretty much impossible to do in a, like, succinct way before. I mean, you could technically, like, iterate through the array, removing the items, incrementing a counter, and then when the counter reaches the number, then you get the first item, but that was, like, a big pain, and it's also really slow, because data packs are actually quite slow to run. Which
performance is definitely a concern when you're doing data packs.
Yeah, so macros allows you... it allows you to do a lot of things dynamically, which either weren't possible before or were very slow and inefficient before. Which is really good, because a lot of Moxlib functions took, you know, like 50 to 100 commands, for example, to run, which now you can do it in a single macro.
And
that makes our lives a lot easier, especially when in a data pack like Code of Copper, right, you've got to run a lot of those sort of functions very often, which can be quite inefficient.
Yeah. And macros have changed, like, I'd say have pretty much changed the technical data pack landscape, really. Just the, sure, the possibilities that it's opened up is, like, incredible.
Yeah, and I mean,
I was just going to say, I'm quite excited to see where it can be taken in the future.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they've been around for, like, a few months now. But yeah, we haven't actually used them that much, I feel like, in Code of Copper, because basically because most of it was already written before macros were added, we're not actually using macros that much, but we have started to use them in some of the new things we added, and yeah, they make stuff so much easier.
Yeah. I mean, when I get back into doing some more data packing, I think I probably will explore macros a bit further. I have used them. What did I use them for? I was experimenting around with them. But yeah, there's a lot of potential there. And like, some really cool things can be done with them. And I mean, as well, like, there's other changes as well that have been, I'm just going to go on a bit of a tangent, there's other changes as well that Mojang has added quite recently to data packs that have really improved the experience writing them, especially in a technical style, like the return command.
Oh, that was such a lifesaver. It made it so much easier, because basically before, this is something you don't necessarily do a lot in regular data packs, but you do a lot more in technical data packs. Basically, sometimes you want to say if a certain condition is met, like if an entity is, you know, if an entity is in a certain place, or, you know, if someone's doing something or something's happening in the world, you want to run a certain set of commands. And the way you'd have to do that before is you'd have to go, okay, you'd have to say, if this, well, you have two options. You have to do the check every single time. You go, okay, execute if blah blah blah, do command one, execute if the same thing, do command two, etc. Or you could create a function, and then you say, execute if condition, run this function, and then basically everything in the function, you do everything in the function. Now with return, there's a much nicer way to do that, and you can just say, if not this thing, return, and then do the thing. And then that just basically allows you to stop execution of the current function, and without having to, like, branch off into separate functions.
Yeah, it allows you to use what I've always called the guard clause in your coding, and it basically, yeah, it means that you can handle all these different edge cases and exceptions in a very clear way, in a very, it's a way that's easy to read, and it's just nice, rather than having to split into so many different files, just being able to stop execution is quite a nice quality of life feature. And it really, these kind of features that make me feel like they are moving data packs towards a more technical focus, like giving us, like, a bit more tools to work with our data packing. You want to go?
I definitely feel like ever since that's one snapshot, 23W03A, right, where they added the string manipulation feature. I definitely feel like they've added a lot of things to data packs which are super, super useful and super, like, yeah, it definitely feels like they're taking the data pack community, like, thinking about them and adding features which would be nice for data packs, because, like, before that, I feel like data packs didn't really have any major changes since, like, 1.14 or something, which was a long time ago.
Yeah,
it was actually before I started making data packs.
Yeah, I mean, world gen was the main focus for a couple of years, I feel. 1.16 did a lot with that, custom dimensions and stuff. I remember the Infinity April Fool snapshot was really when they fleshed out all the custom dimension stuff, which was super cool, don't get me wrong. That was, like, awesome that they did that. But, yeah, the data stuff hadn't really changed since 1.15, I feel, which was when they added command storage, which was a good addition.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, well,
and then
it's a good addition that made it so much more efficient to do data manipulation and all that stuff.
Yeah, because before, I guess, there was only scoreboards, right?
Entity data manipulation you could do, think, but I don't even know if you couldn't really, I don't think markers existed at the time, so you couldn't really do arbitrary manipulation there. Yeah, the command storage was a good addition there.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually only been making data packs since, I think, 1.16, so yeah, I basically only really know what changed from then onwards. I feel like ever since that snapshot 23WO3A for I think 1.19.4 was it? Yeah, that was the first real, like, proper data pack update in a while.
Mm.
Since then they've added so many features, like they added slash return, they added the random command, which is pretty useful. I haven't actually used it that much, but it is just a nice little thing. They added function macros, they added string processing, they added... I'm sure there's more, which I can't think of right now. There's so much stuff that's, like... Most of the things we do in our Code of Copper data pack are, like, utilizing all of the new features that they've added. In the version since that snapshot, basically.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I just remembered where I did use a bunch of those new features is I made a Code of Copper extension for a server I was on.
And, oh, that's right. Yeah.
I used a lot of, like, macros and even slash random, I think.
Because
I might have used slash random or I might have used moxlib to random. I don't really remember. So nice to use. Macros are such a, like, such a time saver. And, like, I could make it play custom music sounds that you give it in the function and then it just passes that into play sound and then it starts playing music, which is really fun.
Yeah. What I was gonna say is I think for a certain amount of time we were trying to avoid using, like, macros and the new features in Code of Copper so that it would be backwards compatible with like older versions.
Yeah.
We
were targeting 1.20.2, I believe, at the time, right? Was it 1.0? Or was that when they added macros?
Well, I think we were even trying to be compatible further back, because that was when they added macros, I believe. We were trying to be compatible backwards to, like, 1.20. So, yeah, it was quite a while. Like, function macros were in the game for quite a while before we actually started properly using them. And then after a certain point, we were like, you know what, this thing can't really be done easily without macros, so I think we're just going to... we're just going to start using them. And after we did, it definitely made our lives a lot easier.
Oh, definitely. It's, like, such a good feature.
Oh, yeah.
I just got hit by gravel.
Yeah, so all of these new things definitely make the developing experience of technical data packs much easier. And yeah, so I think now more than ever is, like, a really good time to work on technical data packs because they're definitely possible. They're still, you know, they still require quite a lot of, like, you know, sort of sideways logic because of how Minecraft data packs work. But it is a lot of fun to try and think and sort of form your logic in different ways to, to create something which data packs weren't necessarily designed for. And I think, like, that's the thing with a lot of programming languages. Like, I feel like a language is good to learn, not necessarily because you're going to use it, but because it teaches you something about programming. So, for example, right, there are tons of programming languages in the world, you know, and they're all used for different use cases. And each one of them is slightly different in the way that you would program in it. So when you learn a new language, your sort of whole view on programming shifts a little bit depending on which language you're programming in. And I think MC Function, like, there's a few different classes, general classes of programming languages within which it's quite similar concept. So, like, for example, Java and C Sharp are both object-oriented languages, which means that a lot of the features of them are very similar. So if you know one, then you pretty much know the other, and like the sort of the logic is very similar between the two. And then there's like the more functional side of languages, which again is quite a different paradigm, different way of thinking about programming. An MC Function is definitely in neither of those categories, really. It's more like instruction-based programming, which is more like Bash, which is not a language that most people program in, and I can definitely see why. I've tried, and it's not very fun.
Oh no, Bash scripting is a pain.
But I think programming MC Function is like, the reason I enjoy it so much is because it's so much of a challenge, right? You've got to think about, you know, you want to do this thing. I would give an example, but I don't want to spoil too much of our episode for the Code of Copper data pack. But yeah, you want to do this thing, and you got to figure out how to do it using only the tools that MC Function provides, and it's definitely a lot of fun to do that.
Yeah. Definitely, I agree. There's just something, like, it's, you have to get in a completely different mindset to solve problems in MC Function, because you don't really have variables, you don't have all of these concepts that you, like, learn to rely on in most other languages. Like, even Bash, even though it's, like, quite rudimentary, Bash does have variables. Bash has, like, string concatenation.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, we've got that now as well. But, like, it has easier string concatenation. It has, like, loops. And it has all these, like, control flow that is, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it's just a more, like, I don't know. Like, MC Function is a really unique language.
It's almost like programming in assembly, right? Like,
yeah.
So it's in, like, a higher level language, right, you have all these concepts of, yeah, exactly, you got loops and, like, the stack, which probably most programmers don't even know what that is, and, like, the way that that works when functions are called and everything.
Yeah.
That is, like, a higher level concept which doesn't exist really in assembly. And again, it also doesn't exist in MC Function. So you've got to, like,
do it yourself.
Use these sort of workarounds and create these structures yourself. And that is definitely very prevalent in technical data packs, because you don't need the stack if you're making, you know, custom items or like an adventure data pack or something. You're not going to need to use the stack for that. But but if you're making something like your own programming language, as you'll probably see when we make a podcast episode about that, the stack is extremely useful and pretty much necessary for a lot of things. So, yeah, you got to sort of like reinvent a lot of the concepts which you almost take for granted in other programming languages, and it's a lot of fun. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, if you make data packs, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it as like a beginner thing, because it's definitely a more advanced kind of data pack. Mm. But you know, if you've been making data packs for a while, and you want to try something new, it's definitely a lot of fun to try and make a technical data pack. Cause
yeah, definitely.
It forces you to think in a different way than usual.
Yeah. I can certainly recommend it. it's fun, and I'll also say I learned a lot doing it. A little bit about me, I'm a pretty much a full-time programmer, but I mean, my style of programming, I program in Ruby, which is a very dynamic language, interpreted dynamic language that you can pretty much do whatever you want with it, and it kind of just lets you do it. Oh no, there's a witch. Yeah. Hang on, I gotta run. But yeah, and so I've never had to use a stack really in that language. I mean, like,
no,
I don't even use for loops.
yeah.
Ruby has a method called .each, and you pass it a block, and it handles the looping over the array or the hash or whatever you're using for you. So, I mean, a lot of quality of life stuff in that language, but it means I don't really do as much of the low-level stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could, you know, do a bit of Rust, I could do a bit of C, or, you know, could do it in Minecraft, make data packs, and I can really learn these concepts, like stacks. Yeah.
So and yeah, all this stuff. It's actually probably almost like it's kind of a good way to learn about these things, because yeah, you get to like implement. Oh, okay. I just fell quite a long way in Minecraft, so that's why I suddenly made that noise. Anyway. What I was going to say is, explain
for anyone that's not that is audio only, we're actually playing Minecraft at the same time as this. You may have already picked this up throughout the video or throughout the podcast, but I don't think we've said it formally, so I'm just going to put that one there.
I'm not sure. Yeah, anyway. Yes, we are. Yeah. We are doing that. So, yeah, if you're wondering what okay. all those sort of references to Minecraft are while we've been talking, that is why. But yeah, as I was saying, like, programming an MC function is like a way to sort of learn about these different concepts, and you sort of get to almost reinvent the wheel, and like create these concepts and implement them in MC function, which again, it's a bit like programming in assembly. If you program in assembly, you will have to create your own version of all these features which you take for granted in other programming languages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the other element I think that's quite fun about it as well is that feeling that you're doing something that, like, you're exploring territory, doing something that no one's done before.
Mm.
Because technical Minecraft is quite, not technical Minecraft, technical data packing is quite niche.
Definitely.
if you look on, like, Planet Minecraft, the majority of data packs you're gonna see are, you know, custom items, Minecraft, but the sky is green. I don't know, like, challenge data packs. And there's a lot of merit to those. There's people have made some incredible stuff. Spells, world gen, like, the Tectonic comes to mind in that department. Incredible, like, data packs. But you don't see many, I mean, programming languages, regex libraries, like computer sciencey stuff. And I mean, fair. Your average Minecraft player isn't going to be interested in that. But at the same time, you're tackling a task. You're solving a problem that hasn't been solved in this way before.
Yeah, it's definitely...
You're doing things in Minecraft that no one else, to your knowledge, has done before. And I find that quite appealing because Minecraft's such a popular game. You can... Yeah. There's so many areas in Minecraft that it's like, oh, someone's already done this before, you know? Someone's already figured this out. There's already the optimum farm to produce this item, right? Someone already figured that out. Mm. You know, they did the math. There's already the ultimate way of getting, I don't know, beating the Ender Dragon, right? People do that in, like, 7 minutes or something, right? Insane, like, optimizations in most areas of the game. Ooh, actually, we've got a deep dark over here. But yeah, technical data packing is an area that not many people explore for obvious reasons. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure that Code of Copper was like pretty much the first written programming language in vanilla Minecraft using datapacks. I mean, sure, people have made modded languages before. I know that. But nobody's really made one in datapack before us because, well, we literally started making it like the same week the snapshot came out, making it all possible. And yeah, it's quite, yeah, there's definitely something appealing about doing something that's never been done before. And also it's very satisfying, like when you're looking at data packs and like thinking about how you would make this thing in this really hacky workaroundy way, you know, and then it works. There's something really satisfying about that. And
yeah,
just like having it work and. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely...
The fact that you can theorize, what if we could do that? You know, you can theorize it, you can plan it out, and then you can see it come to fruition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we were like, what if we made a programming language in Minecraft? Is that possible? And then we made it, and it turned out it was possible. And then, yeah, it was just really cool to see that, like, yeah, we made that, and it works.
Yeah, and not only was it possible, there's a lot of things we could do. There's a lot of features that we could do. Are you running back to get iron for these diamonds?
No, I didn't see the diamonds.
You didn't see the diamonds? Oh, I shouldn't have said anything. They're right here. Yeah, like, we'll talk about this more in our Code of Copper video or podcast. But there's a lot you can do. There's a lot we could do with Code of Copper that just never would have thought would have been possible. Yeah. I implemented a sorting algorithm. It's not efficient. No, not at all. Quite slow, but it's a full quick sort algorithm. Just that feeling of I went on Wikipedia, I looked up how the algorithm worked, I saw some code examples, and then I worked out how to implement it. And that felt awesome.
Yeah, I keep... Like, now that we've done Code of Copper, and we can see that... And I can see that, like, a lot of things which you do in, you know, typically, you know, other programming languages are possible in Minecraft datapacks. Mm. I keep thinking to myself, like, whenever I come across something, wouldn't it be cool to make that in Minecraft? So, like, I don't know. For example, a while ago, I was exploring how neural networks work, right? Because AI is you know, it's the thing of the moment, right? Everyone's talking about AI and what it's about, right? And what I wanted to learn is how a neural network actually works. So I did some online research and I implemented like a little thing which, you know, is like a very simple neural network that controls a self-driving car.
Yeah, cool. Oops. Oh, I'm gonna get your stuff.
Yeah.
It's attacking you. Oh, I killed your dog!
No, you
dang
didn't.
It. He teleported to me. Okay. Thank goodness! Thank goodness the dog didn't die.
But yeah, so then I thought, okay, right, so I made a neural network, right? It's pretty cool, you know, it controls a car which learns to drive itself. But you know what would be even cooler? Making that in Minecraft, right?
Oh, that would be so cool.
Using only commands.
Yes.
So I think I'm probably giving a bit of a spoiler here, because I think I'm going to make a video about that, and I'm going to try and make a neural network in Minecraft and have it control a little car that drives around the Minecraft terrain.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that should be possible. It probably won't be very efficient, but at least I can do it, right?
Yeah,
I think that's just so cool that it's like stuff like that is possible within Minecraft. And that's actually why I like playing Minecraft so much, right? So, I love playing Minecraft. It's my favorite game. It's one of the only video games I play, actually. Because it's so, like, versatile. There's so much stuff you can do.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can... Really, there's something in Minecraft for everyone, right? If you're a programmer, you can make Minecraft data packs. If you're more of, like, someone who likes the challenge, you can play survival, and you can do, like, you know, crazy stuff in survival. If you're more of a creative person, you can build stuff in creative. If you're like someone who likes to like get the optimum way of doing something in a game, you can make farms. You know, there's something in it for everyone, and really, you can basically do anything in it, right?
And yeah.
Yeah, with data packs, you can pretty much do whatever you want, including making a neural network, which I just think is such a cool thing about, and such a unique thing, I feel like, about this game. Which isn't in a lot of games. Like, most games don't have a way for you to just add arbitrary content to it. I mean, technically you can, like, mod some games and change them and stuff, but, like, datapacks is technically vanilla Minecraft, right?
Yeah.
It's officially built into the game.
Yeah. I mean, it's the game's internal command system slightly modified, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's a lot more complicated than that, I'm sure, behind the scenes, but that's effectively, like, what it is if you sum it up. It is super cool that, like, we've been given these tools to work with. I mean, there is also something to be said about the, like, how there's not really any official modding support. I mean, there's technically... Yeah. They've gotten better. They've given, obviously, the decompilation symbols, I believe, for Minecraft nowadays. They didn't used to do that.
Right.
But still, like, Bedrock Edition's got its own modding API, but... Java Edition still doesn't. But we do have data packs, which is nice.
Yeah, if you really want to make something like that adds tons of content and completely reworks the game, you have to use a mod. You still can't do everything with data packs, but you can do a lot.
You can do anything a computer can do.
Yeah, I mean, we have proven with... I mean, I first technically proved it with Fungecraft. And then we proved again with Code of Copper, Minecraft is Turing complete, which, if you don't know what that means, it means, yeah, it's just as powerful as the computer sitting on your desk that you're watching this on. You may not be watching this on a computer, but it's just as powerful, theoretically anyway, as a computer or a phone, right? Obviously,
it has the same capabilities.
Yeah, it's the same capabilities, exactly. It's not nearly as fast or efficient or anything. But yeah, it can do all of the same things, which is pretty cool. So yeah, I think with that, we can probably wrap up this episode. Hopefully that's given like a bit of an insight into the world of technical data packs and why they're so cool and why we enjoy doing them so much.
Why you should try out doing them for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you don't know where to start, you could try looking at our Code of Copper code. It's all publicly available on GitHub, so you can take a look at all the code. If you want, you can contribute to it. That would be greatly appreciated. That has a lot of examples of different things that you can do with technical data packs. It just gives you a good idea of the things that are possible, how to do them. Feel free to, make whatever you want and just play around with it, because it's a lot of fun.
If you don't know how to achieve something, or don't be afraid to just look up how other people have done it. Like, even implementations of it in languages outside of MC function will give you a good overview of the logic of how to complete something. It's quite fun to try and translate that logic then into Minecraft.
That's definitely a fun thing to do, yeah. That is definitely something that I did, because, for example, a programming language, I have implemented a programming language before in other languages, but then, it was translating that concept and that logic into Minecraft, which was, like, really the fun part. Obviously, as we've said before, a lot of the concepts available to you, or, like, the features available to you in other languages aren't in MC function by default. It's just fun to try and use what you got to create things. I think that thus ends the first episode of the Datapack podcast. Thank you for listening, if you made it all the way to the end, which I assume you did, if you are still listening. I will leave a link to our Discord server in the description, so if you want to join it and, have a conversation with us about anything, technical data packs, this podcast, whatever you want, really, we'll be there, and we'll try to answer all of your questions. And if you need help with a technical data pack, we're experienced now,
we're always happy to help.
Give you some guidance on that. I think technical Minecraft data packs is like an aspect of it that it is quite new, I feel like. It's quite a young area of data packs, at least, because a lot of the things that make data packs possible, make technical data packs possible, have just recently been added. So I'm really excited to see what happens with them in the future, and just interested to see what people come up with and where data packs goes, and definitely what new features gets added to Minecraft and what we can do in the future. Any final remarks from you, Ox Alex?
I think you summed it up quite nicely. I will say that Wikipedia is a great resource for finding out about new computer science topics.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's a great resource for everything, really. But I've used it a ton in the past just for working on data pack stuff. And I mean, even if you don't fully learn the implementation from there, there's plenty of links underneath, and it's just a good jumping off start point, really. Yeah, don't be afraid to just look something up if you don't know it. I mean, it's always nice to, you know, try and figure something out for yourself, but do also remember that other people have solved these things before, and you can learn from them.
Again, thank you for listening, and that is the end of the first episode of the Datapack podcast. I hope you enjoyed. I'm sure we'll be back for another episode at some point, hopefully soon. And yeah, I guess we will see you in the next episode. Goodbye.